You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Cara Santamaria.
Howdy.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
Evan Bernstein.
Well, with Christmas coming and all.
And we have a special guest, a return to the podcast of Ian Callanan. Ian, welcome back, buddy.
What's up, guys?
Ian. Oh, my God.
I've heard about you.
I did my YouTuber intro, so I hope that works.
Yeah, there you go. Ian is our tech guru. He's our right-hand man for everything in terms of making the show actually function.
And Jay, though.
Yeah.
He's left-handed. Never mind. Sorry.
All right, Jay's left-hand. And you did the year-end review with us last year.
True.
So this is now the second year in a row, so it's officially a tradition.
That's right. Oh, you even invited me on after the watermelon incident, which is
I did. Something.
Yeah, we talked about that.
I had to think about it. I had to give it some time. But yeah, I love how, like, when we do our live streaming events now, Ian's always this disembodied voice, right? He never shows his face on anything that we do.
Ever.
But Ian's official emoji is the watermelon. That's Ian is the watermelon.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That's it. Gallagher and
if you
and
don't
Ian.
Know what we're talking about, during the 12-hour show, it was like comically perfect. We couldn't have made this happen if we tried to. We were going to, we had a guest who was in their forge, and they have a press, and they were crushing different things, and they were just about to crush a watermelon when Ian hit a button accidentally, and we went to some other video, and we missed it.
No.
And of course,
it was
a one-time live event.
Okay. It was the internet,
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. I slipped and fell, sort of. You can go watch it. It's still available, so we don't have to go through it too much anymore. Thank you.
It was spectacular, yeah.
It's not like we were building up all day to that moment.
Yeah, really.
Or anything like that.
But the thing is, it was like it turned out to be funnier than if we just watched a watermelon get crushed. You know what I mean?
True.
Well, it was epic.
The thing about it was, it was literally like Steve said, the timing couldn't have been more perfect. It was like you were about to see something. You know exactly what you're about to see. And the second it was about to begin, it got pulled away from all of us.
Yeah.
So everybody was sitting there going,
ah! Oh, and it's not like it just got pulled away. He came back right after it was over.
A second after.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's true. What can I say? I'm a comedic genius. I'm sorry. It's just can't help it. It's natural.
Yes. Yes, Ian, you are, and but from my point of view, you just got to just roll with this because I've been living with similar accolades, if you will, for many years after the first time I ever said hello on episode one way back
First word
I still think
infamous.
Steve... I still think Steve edited it, and that's not what was really said, but we just got to roll with it, man.
Okay,
Ian,
thank you.
It's not like things like this have legs. There's a thing called the Heidi game, the Heidi incident in professional sports. The Jets are playing the Oakland Raiders on national television on a Sunday with millions of people watching, and it's a big, exciting game right down to the last play, and they switched it over to see Heidi, the classic old Heidi movie, and the country went crazy over it, and it's forever known as the Heidi incident. So it's, and that was 1972.
Yeah,
so,
but he totally forgot.
Oh, yeah. So within only last 50-some-odd years.
I just had to remind everyone. So, yeah, you're good for about 50 years.
Okay.
And people forget.
Yep. Perfect.
Oh, yeah, that's 50 years, by the way. Just as a nice reminder to everybody that 1972 was 50 freaking years ago.
Oh, some of us were there.
So, this is our year in review show. We're going to look back at 2021. The good, the bad, science, pseudoscience, at how the SGU did, our funniest moments. If this were a TV show, this would be a flashback episode, you know. Do you guys watch those sometimes, like, when I see, this is a flashback episode, I just turn the channel.
Me too.
Guys...
I skip it. Oh, no.
Only if they do the
Wayne's World.
But the difference is, this is more like the director's cut, because in those shows, they're just repackaging old footage, which is annoying. But what we're doing is we are talking about all the old stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
We're not just going to play old clips.
Yeah, no. Here's a clip from March right. when, yeah, we're not going
to
do that.
Yeah, here's something you already listened to.
Well, why don't we get started with some looking back on 2021, the year in science. A lot of stuff happens, a lot of cool stuff, a lot of interesting things. Let's start with space news. What do you guys think the biggest space news of the year was?
Oh, the billionaire space race.
James Webb.
Yeah. That was one of them. Perseverance on Mars.
I put Perseverance as my number one choice.
Yeah, you don't think big. You think that was the like? I guess how do you define biggest? Like probably most important. Okay, I don't know.
Choose your time criteria. No.
Shatner right. in space.
But I think the most Shatner popular. What got the most coverage? Definitely the billionaire space race. Yeah. The penis rocket. Sure.
The penis rocket was big. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey.
Space tourism.
Average.
In general, billionaires in space. But yeah, William Shatner in space was special. I mean, that was good. That was great PR for the whole space tourism thing.
But what meant the most for science and, you know, to in progress, right?
Well, I think that, you know, I think Perseverance, but also, you know, this is the year where it really felt like we were turning the corner on, yeah, we're going back to the moon. Like, that's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, the timeline got, you know, quote unquote delayed. It actually, you know, the original timeline was what,
2028.
And then it was arbitrarily moved up to 2024 for no reason, and nobody thought they were going to do it. And now, like, well, yeah, we got to push it back to 2025. So even if it does happen in 2025, it's still 3 years ahead of the original schedule.
Yeah, the Artemis program.
Yeah. Right. They chose a lander. You know, they're going to use SpaceX Starship as their lunar lander. They're making progress on the spacesuits. Everything's coming together. You know, it really looks like it's going to happen. So that's exciting. You know, this is going to be the decade we get back to the moon.
It also sucks.
Why does it suck?
It's 2021, and we haven't been on the moon for how many decades? It's just like mind-boggling. If you went back to the mid-70s and said, we're not going to go back to the moon until the 2020s, you would say, you're full of crap. Stop lying. That's ridiculous. Nobody would ever believe that. And here we are. It's just like mind-boggling that it's been decades and we haven't been back to the moon. It's like
we have 50 years of better technology now than we had then. That we would have used in the late 70s to go back to the moon.
It's better, but it's not like so much that we built on that technology. That technology is gone. It's done. You can't even recreate it. It's like almost impossible to recreate that technology. Do you think we can build a Saturn V now? No. That's just like to even try that would be ridiculous. So in a way, it's kind of like, you know, we're reinventing the wheel in some ways. It's not a perfect analogy because the technology, sure, it's better. It's definitely better and more sophisticated and everything. But it's just frustrating that there hasn't been a continuous development. It's like kind of just like restarting, you know, restarting the whole trip to the moon. And who knows? Hey, we got lucky in a lot of ways in the late 60s. And I hope we get lucky this time too, because, you know, it's not a no-brainer that it's going to be flawless. Not at all. Because, you know, there's going to be people involved. It's not just like, you know, think of all the screwed up landings on Mars. I mean, that's a horrible percentage.
But Bob, the tolerances for crewed craft are a lot tighter than for robotic craft.
Yeah, right. And if when things go bad, it goes really bad.
Of course.
I'm going to keep my fingers crossed.
But you can't extrapolate from our success rate with Mars landers and to our success rate with crewed craft.
It's not a direct extrapolation, but it's damn difficult. It's damn difficult.
Of course it is.
And we all know how lucky we got in the late 60s. And I think we're going to need a little bit of luck to pull this off flawlessly. Like everyone is really, I think, expects it to be like a no-brainer. This is going to be great. There's not going to be any problems. You know, shit can go wrong. So I'm going to be crossing my fingers.
That's always true.
In the last 20 years, how many crewed missions have we sent to the ISS to swap out crew? There haven't been any problems. We have a pretty good success rate.
Going to an orbiting station and you're comparing that to landing on the moon, staying safe, and then staying safe from the radiation, and then, you know,
it's rocket technology.
It's more than just rocket technology.
We're getting pretty good at it.
It's not brain surgery.
It's a hell of a lot more than just getting from A to B. I mean, they're going to be hanging out there and they're going to be doing shit. Yeah. I'm just saying, my fingers are going to be crossed, and it's about effing time that we're seriously getting back there. Because
I know, in 2001 seemed plausible to us at the time.
It's classic because you overestimate near term and underestimate far term, and that's That's kind of the way things go.
But be optimistic, Bob. The whole point of this discussion is to be optimistic. Now we're going back to the moon. Forget about how long it took. You could also think about the fact that even though it took a long time, the technology we have today is much better. If we tried to do this back in the 80s or the 90s, it would have been a lot harder than it is today. So it's like waiting to buy a computer. The longer you wait, the longer you have to go without a computer. But when you do get one, the better it is for the less money.
I want my Moonbase Alpha.
Well, William Shatner had to go into space first, and he did that. So now,
Kara, you're still, in your 30s. I'm in my late 50s. I don't have much time left. I want to see some shit happen.
Well, and I don't really think we should be like tramping around the moon. So.
Oh, don't even go there.
Show she's not. She's not going there.
I'm cool with all these robot missions.
Yeah, me too. I love them too. Robots.
Robots.
Perseverance.
Of course. The other huge category of news items was COVID. Some weeks it seems like the news is all COVID, 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 COVID. It's like hard to find non-COVID news. It is sucking up all the oxygen out of the room. But some things happened. If you think about where we were at the beginning of 2021,
not good.
No vaccines, basically. Vaccines were just coming out, but there really wasn't any significant distribution of them. But we also weren't contending with any new variants. So on the good side, a lot of people have been vaccinated, and we have tons of vaccines available.
Eight billion doses we've made.
Well, Steve, in our very first episode of 2021, so that was January 2nd, 2021, mm-hmm. the first news item was that there was a new SARS-CoV-2 variant.
Yeah. So it was the year of vaccines and the year of new variants. So we had the alpha variant, the beta variant. Those were kind of fizzles. They didn't really do much. They were a little bit worse, but the vaccine's still covering them. And then we kept talking about, any variant, the next one could be bad. Then Delta hit, and Delta was a game changer. That's when over the summer, we thought that COVID was maybe returning a corner, we getting back to normality, and then boom, the Delta variant hit. Delta variant is like six times more contagious than the original variant. And now we have Omicron, which is three times more contagious than Delta. Yeah. It's even worse in terms of infectivity.
Vaccines are not nearly as good against it.
Partially evasive to the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So although if you get boosted, you're still covered, but each variant seems to be worse, drifting farther.
But Steve, you shouldn't really be that pessimistic, dude. So for me, my top science news for 2021 was mRNA vaccines. That's the beast in the room right there. So I looked at it. Who's the first guy that did it, or first person who did it? Do you know? I didn't know. Robert Malone at the Salk Institute. He was a grad student. He mixed some strands of messenger RNA with some droplets of fat. And I personally think that he was high and looking for something weird to eat. So he realized that this concoction was absorbed by cells and mRNA then began producing proteins. So, and then he realized, he's like, damn, this is going to be something. This could be important. He wrote notes and he signed and dated them. And he said something like, this could allow us to treat RNA as a drug. And then just a little bit later in 1988, he was the first person who actually used these fatty droplets to insert mRNA into a living organism. And in this case, it was a frog embryo. And it worked.
And he made dinosaurs?
That's the first time it happened back in 1988. So I think it's just an amazing, that's a milestone in science.
But to be fair.
Right there. Yes.
As amazing as his initial research was.
Yeah.
Two things. Number one, some incredible people built on this and made it possible. He just started it. Time Magazine did a really good kind of feature on four of the most prominent vaccine scientists who brought this to life. And also, Robert Malone, not somebody you want to listen to now. Not sure if you're aware.
Really?
He has run the gamut. He has gone on the Steve Bannon podcast, the Tucker Carlson podcast.
Oh,
he's claiming now that the mRNA vaccines that are on the market might actually make your infection worse. It's very scary.
That
gone
is
off
horrific.
The reservation.
What he's gone off the reservation. Man. Yeah. Wow. He is a misinformation peddler now. What a bummer.
Wow,
yeah.
That's really disappointing.
Yeah, it's kind of our whole modern society in one person. Invents amazing new technology that led to these vaccines and now is spreading misinformation. That's perfect.
Yeah, it's not the first time it's happened.
No, no, unfortunately.
But did you guys read about the, at nature.com, they did a special article about the vaccinations themselves. And this one was actually my, one of the heroes actually of the year is the entire community of scientists, doctors, and everyone else contributing to the vaccine research. And I'll just read you this blurb. Researchers are developing more than 300 COVID-19 vaccines in addition to the 23 already in use around the world. 84 are in early stage clinical trials and 40 are at much later stages of development. And that's from practically zero to begin the year with, you know, with just a handful of these things. So the advancement in 2021 of vaccine understanding, technology, and research has been warp speed, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
And this year, you know, we have two drugs now that are towards the end of the pipeline, the molnupiravir and the Paxlovid, which are antivirals effective against the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And they prevent 100% of deaths in the trials. You know,
that's so the tools are coming in which we will much better deal with.
Well,
this.
And the thing is, yes, the tools are coming, but the tools are also already here. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think is such an important part of the conversation that's maybe a little bit missing. And I'm curious what you guys think about this. You know, I recently had a gathering with some friends. We were all negative. We all took antigen tests. Everybody's negative. And then a friend came down as positive within a couple of days. And I see a wide range of resulting conversations, like chatter, from very, very intelligent and
informed people.
Informed people, yes. All the way from, I'm not that worried because I'm boosted, to guys, we're not out of the woods. It's really, really bad. We, you know, cancel all your plans. Be very, very, you know, we really shouldn't be out in public and blah, blah, blah. And what I worry is that there's not a sort of nuanced in-between point. And I think this might be, and I'm curious what you guys think about this, a sort of cognitive bias where we develop a baseline of concern early on in something like a global pandemic. So we remember back when we were like bleaching our groceries, right? Like nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And we had a baseline of concern. And then things start to get a little better. We let our guard down. And then something happens like Delta. And instead of iterating to a new baseline, we go back to our previous baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm seeing that a lot with people where they're like, it's not over. So we need to be just as vigilant as we were at the beginning. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be vigilant. But we do have vaccines now. We do have medication now that we didn't have previously. We're able to get PPE, which we weren't able to do before.
Yeah, we're definitely in a much better situation. And yeah, we're not doing the level of caution that we were early on. You're right. There is an anchoring bias, I think, in terms of where you started off. Totally.
And it worries me because people aren't living their lives. And I'm really afraid of the mental health consequences of this. Like they're not finding doing the risk benefit analysis and finding a medium that works for them.
Right. So, I mean, I think if you are vaccinated and boosted, like you're fully protected and you're not in a super high risk population, then you can, you know, go back to mostly normal life. You may want to wear a mask in certain situations. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, and here in California, you have to.
Yeah.
It's mandated anyway. Well, now you're wearing a mask when you're out in public.
And if you're in Florida, you're strongly urged not to. Right? I talked with somebody who lives down there. He's like, yeah, nobody wears masks.
Oh, that's so
nobody.
Scary. Oh my God.
Well, I got to tell you, I work at a hospital, and so that's my barometer for how bad things are going, at least regionally. And it's been very accurate. When the hospital's like, all right, guys, we're going into, you know, crisis protocol with regard to COVID, that's always at the beginning of a massive wave, you know, in the area.
Right.
And we are just going into that right now. So I was just the last 2 weeks I was doing inpatient consult service. Hospital is overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Yale is overwhelmed. I mean, we're dealing with it, but it's full. The hospital's full. If you're people in the emergency room, you could be waiting there for a day to get admitted to the hospital. You know, most of our patients we were treating in the emergency room. A lot of unhappy patients. You know,
headlines today in the paper, Steve, saying in Connecticut since early November, COVID hospitalizations have quadrupled.
I know that's what it feels like. You know, so and this is at the very beginning of the Omicron wave.
Yep.
Yeah, this is real.
No, it's real. It's real. And that and that means you need to step up your precautions at least one or two notches. No question. Mm-hmm. We're not going to the lockdown. We're not, you know, doing the things we were doing at the very, very beginning when we
didn't know. Places are. I think the UK is. You know, it's not because Omicron's just rampant in the UK right now.
Yeah, and there are cities are taking measures. Yep.
Yeah, there are new closures. You know, all sorts of things are happening. But I think the issue here is it's not hell or heaven.
It's somewhere in between.
It's somewhere in between. Totally. And so it's like new available evidence, iterate, new available evidence, iterate. It's the only way we're going to get through this without, you know, really destroying our mental health.
Carol, are you saying we should take a Bayesian approach to the event, to the pandemic?
I am.
Carol, of course we all agree with you, but the, you know, the core problem is in the United States particularly, you know, half the population is science inert. Like they just, they are not factoring in the science. They don't trust the science. They are eschewing, you know, expertise. You know, how do we as a society function as a society when we don't operate as a cohesive society?
The good news is it's not half. It really isn't. We're seeing numbers close to 50% in only the most extreme states here in the U.S. When you actually look at the percentage of the state that's vaccinated, in certain states, yes, it's close to 50%. And in many other states, it's much higher than that. And so that's the good news. I think it feels sometimes like it's 50% because the news likes, or we all like to talk about that because it is a real problem. But, you know, when you actually break it down by population, what, 75 plus, 84% of the U.S. population is fully vaccinated.
Yeah, but if you look at it globally, I think the number I saw today was 57%, which is kind of pathetic.
It's scary, but that also is not just about anti-vax rhetoric.
Right.
So
much
of the global numbers are about access.
Exactly.
Yeah. Geopolitics.
Does fully vaccinated mean two shots or boosted now?
Boosted.
I think it
two shots.
Yeah, I think it depends on, you know, where you're looking.
With Omicron, it means you're boosted.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When we say fully vaccinated now, we should be referring to including your booster, which again, here in the U.S., anybody can just go get for free. You just go. But you're right, Jay. I mean, it is obviously that's the big problem. And I think that's why it's one of the big news items of the year. Like, number one, it's the progress we've made in fighting against this pandemic. And then on the exact, you know, equal and opposite pole of that, what are we covering week after week after week? Vaccine misinformation. And all of the efforts to fight against it. I mean, I think that's by far the number one news item of the year is just all of the efforts that are going into trying to prevent good public health.
Although, let's move to a happier topic. Global warming.
Yeah.
Let's talk about global warming. Because this is also a big
global warming.
A big science news bait and
switch
category.
It was like 50 degrees today in Connecticut. I love this.
We had
warmest December that
we could grow bananas. Pretty soon.
Grow bananas? That's like grow Michelle bananas?
Pretty soon.
Got to try again, Steve.
It's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I have my planters ready to go. So this year we had the IPCC number 6 report, so the updated report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, updating, you know, the science, review of the science about climate change. We also had the, you know, the COP26 meeting, you know, where the world governments got together to talk about whether or not they should do something with an inconclusive outcome. Yay! And it's also a year of extreme weather events.
Extreme nastiness.
Trying to make sense of what these extreme weather events mean. You know, we're in a, I think, a different position than we were a year ago with global warming. I think it's more on everyone's radar. I think the evidence, you know, is, again, it's still coming in. It's absolutely clear that man-made global warming is a thing. It's happening, and we got to do something about it. But I don't think we've crossed a tipping point of political will where we actually are doing something about it. Certainly in the U.S.
I don't think we ever will.
We might not. I think if I had to predict, this is my pessimistic topic. If I had to predict, I would say what's likely going to happen is that most governments are going to do little things where they're nibbling around the edges, but not going to really make a significant difference in the course of global warming. And, but we are going to, you know, technology will advance until eventually, you know, technology will solve the problem in that it will allow us to reduce our carbon emissions, but it'll be too late to avoid.
Yeah, but not before a ton of people die.
Yes, yeah, it's going to be
displaced.
Yeah, it's going to be, we're going to blow past 1.5. We're probably going to blow past 2.0 degrees C above, you know, pre-technological baseline temperatures.
I could make a worse prediction.
And we'll see what happens.
Oh, it could be worse.
Only question at this point is, you know, is the tipping points, which we can't really predict. You know, will the Antarctic ice sheet fall into the ocean? You know, that kind of thing. If it does, we're pretty screwed. You know, if we dodge that bullet, it's not going to be as bad. But, you know, we'll find out in 100 years. But it's, you know, I predict, yeah, we're not going to successfully, you know, do what we state we should do, which is keep, you know, warming below 1.5 C above pre-industrial levels. Not going to happen. We don't have the political will. What's your worst prediction, Bob?
Worst is in 20 years, it's so obviously getting really bad and countries are getting desperate and some country takes on a geoengineering scale effort to deal with it and they screw up. Mm-hmm. And then, because, you know, if you're involved in something at the geo scale where, you know, like, it's like you're seeding the clouds to, you know, to,
right.
to, and you screw up and you can't reverse it. You can't turn it off. And it's like, oh boy, we made a mistake.
Give us an example. I'm not clear on what
then we get Snowpiercer. You guys see that show, Snowpiercer?
Yep.
They try to fix global warming and they plunge the planet into an ice age. Yep.
There you go. That's an example. You do something at such a dramatic scale that the worst case scenario is like altering the environment of the Earth, you know, increasing, you know, the effect.
I know. Let's push the Earth a little bit farther away from the sun. What could go wrong?
That was an episode of Futurama.
Right. It's like, yeah, that might happen. You're right. That could be like a quote worst case scenario. But I think the thing that we often forget because it's too existentially painful to think about is that, like, we did that. We just don't see it happening on the time scale. Like, you're talking about overnight. But, like, this is happening overnight in a geologic sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Totally.
Like, it is that bad already. There's almost kind of nothing worse. Like, yes, it could always get worse, but, like, lots of people are going to die. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
Lots of animals are going to die. Lots of vegetation is going to die.
Of course. I mean, that's why the people die, right? Is because
right. The whole chain goes down.
Yeah, it's because of drought. It's because of famine. It's because of displacement. It's because of sea level rise. It's because of disease and pestilence and pandemics. And, you know, all of these things are directly related.
Oh, sure.
To climate change.
So we spoke on the show that aired last week. This is our Fort Collins private show that we did about how fragile our civilization is. What, you know, like, look what happened when 20% of, you know, we started pooping 20% more at home than at work, and that how that disrupted the toilet paper supply chain, whatever. But think about how disruptive global warming is going to be. I think the most disruptive aspect of it is going to be the climate refugees.
Exactly.
What's going to happen when we have hundreds of millions of people who no longer can live where they're living? They're going to go somewhere. They're not going to just stay there.
We can't handle the hundreds of thousands of refugees we see now.
Right. It's good. That's
happens
gonna
when
be
that's the, an order of magnitude or two more.
That's going to be massively disruptive. And then, you know, growing locations are going to shift. You know, but our infrastructure is not going to easily shift along with it. You know, what happens when the North American breadbasket moves from, you know, America to Canada? Just as an example, it's going to be extremely disruptive to food production and food supply lines. And then, of course, coastal cities are going to, we're not budgeted, you know, for the damage that's going to be happening to coastal cities.
Yeah, basically go to Disney World when you can, folks.
I mean, I would imagine, Steve, that sometimes the right thing to do might be to just quit, you know, quit on that city and go somewhere else, you know.
Yeah, but then, so there's millions of more refugees, right? That's not going to be
where
easy. Look what happened with Katrina. And how disruptive that was, and people were able to go back. What if they could never go back? And, like, you know, New Orleans was gone.
It had to be absorbed. You know,
it had to be absorbed. Yeah, but it's not just New Orleans. It's 20 coastal cities all at once. You know,
right? Well, see, when do you think the excrement's going to hit the spinning blades really hard? Like, when do you think we're going to start seeing?
I think the question is that is a question that is completely based on perspective. Mm-hmm. It depends on who you are and where you live.
Yeah.
The excrement is hitting the spinning blades for a shitload of people right now. Mm-hmm. It's just we're protected.
Yeah,
no, but that's not my point.
I live in the
hills
of Connecticut.
When I say shit hitting the fan, I'm talking it's like Steve said, 100 million climate refugees. I mean, that's not happening now.
It happens slowly but surely. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, there's not going to be like one line where now it's really happening.
Yeah, but Bob, you know, you're missing the point. Bob's saying, what is it going to be? 5 years? 10 years until we hit something that's unavoidably... I know that we're slowly.
Yeah, there's no quote hitting anything. It's that every year we look in hindsight and go, holy shit, how did it get this bad?
Yeah.
So, well, Steve, all right, then how about this? Steve, you say 100 million climate refugees. What do you mean then? Is it going to be, you know, 5 million a year for 20 years? Or is there going to be a year where there's going to be 100 million? What are you talking about then?
I don't know. I mean, these are the things I'm asking. Yeah, but these are things that nobody can predict.
Yeah, those are unanswerable
questions. That's too granular.
I'm looking for an order of magnitude. I'm talking, you're talking 20 years or 500 years?
I think it's probably closer to 20 years, you know, before. Okay. We're going to start, you know, we're already seeing, you know, climate refugees. But we're going to start getting into the millions probably within 20 or 30 years. But it depends on variables that even scientists like, yep, you know, here's the range of problems.
Sure.
So there's two things that I think are going to really, from reading, you know, what the scientists say, that are going to drive the climate refugees. One is just that some parts of the world are going to get too hot to live. They're going to have unsurvivably hot days,
right?
More frequently.
Like today, they may have, you know, 6 or 7 days a year where it's like, you know, it's over 120 and it's incredibly horrible and people die. But yeah. we're going to transition. Those countries are going to transition to 30, 60, 70 days like that, where it's basically you can't live there anymore. You just basically cannot live in that area.
Yeah, and death valley becomes death valley.
That's when you have to get out.
Or even, sorry to interject, but or even places where, for example, it might be livable, but the infrastructure, we're not talking 120, maybe we're talking 100, but nobody in that town ever had air conditioning put into their home. You know, it just wasn't built that way. And so we do see these boundary problems as well. It's not always the most extreme version.
Then the other thing I think it's going to do it is the coastal cities are going to get too dangerous. You know,
We're already seeing that. We're seeing seawater flooding in Bangladesh where the crops aren't growing because they're getting saturated with salt water and they can't withstand that increase in their salination. And we're seeing, creep. We're seeing creep in on the coastlines. Mm-hmm. And even there are islands. I mean, there are islands in the Maldives. There are islands in like atolls kind of in the middle of the Pacific where the island is sandbagged. Mm-hmm. And soon those sandbags won't be enough to keep it above sea level.
Wow.
Like the whole thing is just going to disappear. I mean, it's happening before our eyes right now. It's just very remote from us.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of the point. We're rapidly approaching the time when figuring it out is irrelevant because it's like the die is cast, kids. It's going to happen. It's going to be horrible. We could just mitigate. We could mitigate levels of horribleness.
For balance, because I do think it's going to suck. There's no way around it. It's already sucking. It's going to suck a lot more before we really turn the ship around. But on the other hand, technology is advancing faster than I thought it was. Really, really nicely in terms of renewable energy, grid storage, even nuclear technology, electric cars. We are going to, and you know, I think in 20, 30 years, our energy infrastructure, our transportation infrastructure is going to be awesome. And just because technology is advancing and it will continue to advance. And that's really the only thing we got going for us. And the thing is, politicians really can't do much about that. They could make it happen a little faster. You know,
in our country, you mean? In a country the kind of democracy that we have set up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in the industrialized nations, I will say. In the poorer nations, they basically need our help so that they could bypass coal, you know, and get to cleaner energy quicker. That can make a huge difference. So policy can make a huge difference in countries that can't afford to do it on their own. And that's a good investment because that's going to save trillions of dollars, you know, in climate change induced costs.
Much like healthcare, much like education, the ROI isn't obvious at first. It doesn't realize at first. We've got a great ROI down the line, but there's not always a good economic argument for, you know, keeping people alive.
We definitely have to shift. Our country was doing best when we were able to make long-term investments. And the reason, you know, part of the reason for our success economically, et cetera, is because we did. We made massive long-term investments in education, in technology, in infrastructure. And we got to get back to that mode of doing things. You know, we've been out of it.
Yeah, we've been living off of that for too long.
You know, at the end of the day, I wouldn't be surprised if it makes almost, you know, all the political wrangling makes almost no difference in where we end up in 50 years, you know.
Yeah, and where we end up in 50 years is a complicated question of our health and our wellness, of our you know, survival. But it's also a question of where is our government? Where is our society in 50 years? Because I think that's going to be affected as well.
No, yeah. I agree. And that has a lot to do with technology itself. That has a lot to do with, you know,
absolutely,
social media, the internet. You know, we've talked a lot this year about, you know, how the social media interacts and affects the flow of information and people's belief systems. And I do see, you know, and I've written about a number of articles, you know, over the course of this year. I do think, at least scientifically, we're starting to get a handle on the negative effect, you know, that social media and big internet computer companies have on society and on politics. You know, you can argue that the internet broke democracy. Like, you could make that argument, and it's a reasonable argument and highly defensible. And we're going to need to figure out how to adapt to this, you know, brave new world that we find ourselves in. You know, 15-20 years ago, we're like, yay, social media, it's democratizing information and helping people communicate, and all this wonderful stuff is going to happen. I could go shopping online. And then we've seen people close to us get sucked into this vortex of misinformation. Oof, and
gone.
We are living in a dystopian future. If you compare it to 20 years ago, we are living in the social media dystopian future we never really believed we were going to get to.
One of my favorite news stories of the year was the news stories, I don't remember if I covered it or if somebody else did, about how the vast majority of misinformation on the internet around COVID and vaccines comes from like 12 people.
Yeah, the dirty dozen of COVID misinformation
right.
and
vaccine.
Like, and that's the thing we keep seeing over and over. There's undue influence on the internet.
We basically gave psychopaths and con artists the keys to the kingdom is what happened. And we had no way of managing that. And we still really don't. You know, we're maybe a little bit more savvy about it, some of us, but honestly,
the cow left the barn.
Yeah, I mean, just think about how many people believe demonstrably absurd things, and how disconnected we are.
And it's not that people didn't have those sorts of
course,
thoughts before, but it's just so amplified.
It's objectively worse.
It turned into a monster beyond control.
And it's something. Yeah. It's partly because of something we've been talking about since day one. It's the lack of critical thinking skills, which is critical. I mean, evaluating. Imagine if everyone was well versed in evaluating evidence. Where would we be if that was just that? I think we'd be in a much better place. And we are, you know, and we're not going to get there until something like that happens, or there's much more oversight.
Education's always the best option. You know, we have that trifecta of scientific literacy, media savvy, and critical thinking skills, right? We're always trying to push those three things. And we're suffering now because we have a significant lack of those three things in our society. And people are overwhelmed with not only misinformation, with misinformation that's curated for them by an artificially intelligent algorithm that knows them better than they do. You know, we have algorithms that have been optimized to predict what you're going to buy, and that same technology is being used to predict what you want to watch and what you want to read, and it's created this belief system feedback loop that is, you know, exploiting just vulnerabilities in human psychology.
Let the people believe in that the earth is flat. And
people a psychological perpetual motion things. Machine.
It's like we have to add something to the trifecta. Yeah. You know, you said there's the critical thinking, internet literacy, and what was the other one?
Scientific literacy.
And media. Yeah, media training or media literacy.
Media savvy,
it's like we have to add accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have to hold the individual actors accountable who are intentionally, for very often political gain, forcing misinformation.
Ian, you're our social media expert. What do you think about it?
Solve this.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not sure what the solution is. I mean, we don't have enough oversight, I guess, over the big tech companies, and some of them are external to the US. So, I mean, the TikTok algorithm is awesome, quote unquote, because it delivers such interesting content. And I'll say it later, but like there's a couple people on TikTok that are doing science and they're great, but it also is like fueling pseudoscience beyond measure. And like, the Gen Zs are all inundated with it. And it's like, I'm not sure what the thing is. Obviously, again, it's the political will. Will we actually, be able to enforce like, these companies to ban these like really, dangerous quote unquote speech, if you want to label it that. I don't know. Does that break the freedom of speech thing? I don't think so with, you know, private companies, but.
Correct.
How do we get that with our political power to say, hey, can you tell this private company that maybe they need to like figure that out? Especially given, what is it, Section 140 or whatever that like keeps them from being sued. Have we kind of shot ourselves in the foot in that situation?
Of course.
230, I believe, is the.
Or is it 230? I'm sorry. Yeah, not 140.
It's like a boxing match or like a tournament. Like you can't just let one guy bring a shank into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like all the rules get broken. Of course that guy's going to win every time. And when you look at the algorithms of like, is the great science content or the misinformation rising to the top? Well, the people who just don't play by the rules very easily can overtake the entire system.
Right.
Carol, let me ask you a question. What's more deadly, a shank or a shiv?
Oh, I don't know. What's the difference between a shank and a shiv?
I think you shank somebody with a shiv.
I think the shank
is the
action.
Right. You don't bring a shank in. Oh, God.
One's a verb, one's a noun.
I just made the fatal error. Like when people say, ooh, I need to itch that. It makes me insane.
You just made a few people insane in our audience.
Oh, I'm so sorry, you guys. I know how painful that can be. It's like when somebody brings a shiv into the boxing.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right. Let's pivot to some positive technology news. So I think I tried to look through the news items to try to say, what do I think was like the, again, in retrospect, when we look back on 2021, what was sort of like a real turning point kind of technology? I think, so two things top my list. You guys tell me what's on your list. One was CRISPR off. Remember the CRISPR off thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
You could flip genes on and off reversibly, and just the potential there just seems so amazing for research and therapeutics. And it also... It's my representation of just the incredible advances in genetic technology and CRISPR specifically. And, you know, we are on the steep part of the curve and it's still going. Like it's still going. We're still learning like in more incredible technologies in terms of genetic manipulation so far. And I think that, you know, I am very optimistic about genetic technology. I don't think we're going to abuse it. You know, I think the worst fears of abuse are probably not going to happen. I think because we do it, because it is happening mainly within, you know, medical technology. And,
yeah, where people are abiding by agreed upon ethics guidance.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're already seeing, you know, medical advances and treatments and everything. We're seeing the benefits of it. You know, it's happening. So that's maybe my top list. The other thing that was kind of in the background, we only talked about it a little bit on the show. But over the course of the year, I've seen a number of significant advances in quantum computing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And that's making a lot of like top 10 lists for me.
Yeah, it is. Because I've seen a lot of it. Again, we haven't talked about it every time, but it's like, oh, we could miniaturize this quantum computing chip. That's interesting. You know, like all these little obstacles are starting to fall away.
Error correcting and all
error
that.
Correcting.
Yep.
It's
coming
still,
together.
It still may not come to its, you know, optimistic fruition. It's still, there still may be a deal killer lurking in there that we can't figure out, but the rate at which they are finding solutions to quantum computing problems is very encouraging. And I think we may be getting this, you know, close to this turning point where, you know, that's going to start to become a major player in technology.
Yeah, I really think so. I think quantum computing clearly has quite a future ahead of it. And it's the possibilities are really just mind-blowing. But and I liken that, Steve, you know, what you just said to – I liken that to fusion research, because if you – I mean, just if you track it for this past year, I think it really seems like, you know, that it's different. It's different this past year than it was even for the many years before that, because they're, we're getting – you know, they're making such important milestones – that there's really not too many of those milestones left before we really have something. You know, we have a working reactor that's, you know, maybe not commercial grade, but at least a test bed that's working. And that seems to be not too far away. And once that's done, then what comes after that? You have essentially a working commercial reactor. So I think you would agree that this year was kind of special in terms of fusion research because we've made some pretty important milestones just falling down.
Yeah, we definitely hit, especially with the laser confined, you know, fusion method. We definitely hit some milestones. I still think it's going to be 2050 before we have like commercial fusion power on the grid, or something like that. And that's soon. Again, think about it. All these technologies we talk about, you were just mentioning like the first mRNA thing. It was 30 years ago. That's the delay to, we got this proof of concept. Now we know it can work before you actually get something that's in the clinic or making energy or whatever. It could easily be 20, 30 years. So I think if I had to guess, I'm still putting it somewhere in the 2050 range. And again, like quantum computing, there still may be deal killers because, you know, until you do it, you don't know that you can do it. It could be like the hydrogen thing where, the hydrogen makes perfect sense, except for the fact that we can't figure out how to store it. Well, we'll figure that out. And then here we are 20 years later. And
artificial intelligence might dramatically speed up our ability to have gains in research.
Totally. Is that your vote for technology this year?
Well, I mean, you know, I didn't see anything, you know, as I'm scrolling through my memory of this past year and looking at news items, I didn't see any major breakthroughs in AI. It's kind of like battery technology. Like it's progressing and we're seeing we're seeing interesting new progress every year and, you know, new layers to the complexity of it and what it can do. But at some point, you know, we're going to have a situation where artificial intelligence is going to start to really be able to do things that are going to speed up our ability to gain knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jay, I totally agree. I mean, especially like I talked about this actually 1 year ago. It was the AlphaFold and AlphaFold 2. You know, that's AI. That's AI mediated right there. And that's going to, you know, being able to determine protein folding, that problem has, much of it has fallen by the wayside. It's made dramatic and very accurate predictions that's AI. That's AI based right there. And there you go. That's going to save us many, many years of research and millions of dollars. So this information about protein folding is going to come fast. And they're releasing huge libraries of protein, mm-hmm. very accurate protein predictions. And, Jay, that's all AI, dude. And, yes, we're going to be seeing a lot of that. And that's always a safe bet to talk about at the end of every year is AI research.
Bob, we might have, you know, a computer system. Oh, and, you know, and this is where these, you know, fields kind of crisscross, you know, concentric circles.
Exactly.
Like if we had quantum computing and quantum computing can help artificial intelligence research or speed that up, right? You know, these can support each other. But, and I know we've talked about this on the show, but it's just a fun thought experiment. You know, imagine where we're at the point where we're posing questions to artificial intelligence. Like, what can we do about the grid and battery storage?
So, recently I wrote two articles that are about research that was augmented by AI. One we talked about on the show, the Xenobots, right?
Yeah.
The fact that AI was able to run billions of simulations and figure out the optimal shape of these, you know, living robots, these Xenobots. But the other one, which we didn't talk about on the show, was also using AI. So we use AI to test the structure of potential solar cells photovoltaic cells to make them more efficient. What configuration will be more efficient? But again, there's like so many different, like, you know, almost virtually infinite configurations. So now we have an AI algorithm that will predict which configurations will be more efficient, which we could then test with the AI to test how efficient they should be.
Cut out the fat and go
for
the meat.
We are doing years of research in hours. This is one of the most fulfilled promises of future technology. We are already living in an age where AI is doing months or years or even decades of research in hours or days or weeks.
That's what I'm talking about.
And across
every discipline. That's the other cool thing. It's happening in healthcare. It's happening in material science. It's happening, you know, in engineering. It's happening everywhere.
That might be the element, though, guys. Like, you know, earlier Steve said you know, technology might save us and Kara, you were like, you know, come on, is it really gonna save us? And I think
I was saying it's not gonna save those of us who don't have access to it. But
yeah, that's true, right? It's not, you know, when you say us, you know, we're talking about pockets of us, but
exactly.
But that's in a weird kind of way, as if we're living in our own simulation, like the world is falling apart in front of our eyes. We look at the last 10 years and we can literally point our fingers at things that have screwed up the world significantly that didn't exist 30 years ago, you know, like the internet, you know, for good and bad, the internet has done a lot of bad. And then you look at artificial intelligence and you look at like achievements in science and it's almost like there's like this race happening. Like what's going to win out? Is the best properties of humankind going to win out over the worst properties of humankind? You know, and I kind of look at it like we're in a foot race now to the finish line on, you know, what's going to be our ultimate, you know, result here, you know, cause I global warming is one of those things that could, you know, it could take us out.
It's an eschatological risk.
Right. Yeah. And then on the other hand, you look at artificial intelligence and you're like, we might have a machine answer our problems, give us the actual answers to the questions that we need right now. Like that could happen. We could be within 10 years of that happening.
Jay, we have the answer, man. It's 42.
Yeah. I think
AI said so.
It's a funny way to look at it. It's just an interesting and funny way to look at the reality that we live in. We have such amazing things happening where I am, you know, mRNA and the whole platform. I know that we've been working on it for 30 years, but man, did it come like right when we needed it. mRNA was luckily there when this pandemic started to squeeze the life out of this planet.
Yeah.
If it weren't for scientists and engineers and researchers, we would have been effed without that mRNA technology. We would have been in bad shape.
Well, there were other vaccines.
Behind.
MRNA technology. We already know that.
Right. Yes, not as good.
It's going to enable us to change the vaccine to keep up with the new variants, to maybe tackle other diseases. Like I know they're working on an HIV mRNA-based vaccine. Yeah, that technology, we're just seeing the beginnings of it. You know, it's like finally, we've been working on this technology for 30 years. Now we've crossed this line where to applications. And then the applications are going to start coming fast and furious.
And you know, then right next to it, CRISPR, like kicking ass, like actually, you know, I'm expecting like some remarkable things out of CRISPR in the next 10 years. Like we are going to see things that humanity has had to deal with from the very beginning just not be a problem anymore.
Did we talk about using CRISPR to sex animals? Did we talk about that on the show? I remember.
I don't recall.
There's another CRISPR news not too long ago where, so you know now, like in the chicken industry, they basically sacrifice all the males and they raise all the females because it's just more cost effective that way. But what if we could just magically make all of them female?
To sex them, like to determine their sex, but
you could make them all
Park,
female.
Chicken Park.
Yeah. So they've done it. They've done it with CRISPR. You know, you have a system where there's like a suicide switch that only kills all the males, or you could kill all the females, or whatever. You could, you know, this is like at the embryo stage, so they're not born as chicks. So that for research and for, you know, food production, this could be a massive efficiency gain using CRISPR.
And you're saying like we're already doing it.
It's happening.
I think that's such a cool example. Like we talk a lot on the show about 5 to 10 years, 5 to 10 years, or 10 to 50 years, with the example of like quantum computing and
fusion research
and AI. But I think one of the things that we talked about a lot this year that's sort of at the translational edge, sort of this is now the accumulation of the previous several decades of research, is brain-computer interfaces. Mm. Like, we've done a lot of stories, and I wonder sometimes if it's just, like, our bias because it's super interesting
to us. A little bit.
But that's happening. It's freaking happening. Yeah. And it's amazing how many lives are actually being affected now, and that, you know, we're still sort of on the precipice in terms of, like, really good trials are showing all this amazing promise, but it's in human beings now.
Yeah.
Which means that it's not going to be long before these things, and some of them are already available clinically, but before it's like a regular option for individuals to be able to utilize these interfaces.
Dr. McCoy was clearly wrong referring to Pike and saying that we couldn't tap into the human brain. That prediction did not pan
right?
out. We clearly can, and brain-computer interfaces are showing that. But now that I have got the floor finally, I've got to do a 5-minute rewind, and I want to just express how happy I am that Steve is finally seeing things my way when he was talking about, you know, doing decades of research over the weekend. And that's exactly what I'm talking about, because I agree with Steve, as he often says, so much in science research is incremental, and it's true. It's very incremental. You're not going to see big leaps. And over 20 years, even minimal incremental research improvements can have dramatic changes, and that is absolutely true. But as I've been saying for a long time, we are now reaching a point where we can automate certain things like research, and we will see the day in our lifetimes where we have dramatic, far beyond incremental improvements in scientific discovery based on things like AI and automated scientific research. So we're going to be seeing that. A lot of things will stay incremental, but I think in the future, a lot of things are also going to go beyond incremental advances when you could literally do, you know, months of research in a day, at least months of human level research in a day.
Yeah, I think computational chemistry is an area where that's just exploding. Like when we're talking about looking for affinity of molecules, how well do they fit in certain receptors? When you can just like model these things out using algorithms and having these calculations run in the background, it's amazing how much we know now about the shapes and the affinities of just different drugs and how they fit different places. And just like modeling protein structures and things like that. Things that used to be so painstaking in the lab. Now it's like, oh, the computer just runs it in the background. So cool.
With the absolutely. Brain interface, how long till I can order Grubhub with a thought? I was just wondering if you guys have a...
Yeah, right? Let's talk about real just world like,
that is probably honestly going to be more of a regulatory question than an actual technology question, okay. I think. Okay. I think we're kind of close to that.
I mean, that's the killer app turning point. You know, like when do we get to that point? Like with the smartphone was just like a killer app that just made a huge change. The technology was incremental, but then that came out and then suddenly we were all using smartphones.
Changed the world.
We're going to get these incremental changes with brain machine interface. Then there'll be we'll cross over some boundary and somebody will come out with something and then suddenly we're all jacking in, you know, and then that's what's going to happen.
I do think, though, that we probably could be closer to that than we are. And I shouldn't say could as in that's what we want. But we don't want that. I mean, there's a really big fear around what that means. What are the implications of being able to order Grubhub with your thoughts?
I mean, a lot of cheesecake in my case.
I mean, right, yeah. Weight gain.
Yeah, you think the pandemic pounds were a lot.
Oof. Don't remind me.
All right, a couple of pseudoscience things for the year. So we talk about science of the year. I know there's so much to talk about. We can't talk about all the science of 2021. Couple of pseudoscience things peaked above the herd for me. I think the biggest pseudoscience story of the year was the fact that UFOs are back.
Wow.
UFOs. Yeah. Right?
They never
Didn't
left.
Did we deal with those like 20 years ago?
I mean, apparently not.
Philip Glass wrote
that
book.
Yeah, we had the Pentagon UFO videos, and then that just sparked a whole new generation of people. And... oh, just terrible. But it's all the same crap. It's all the same crap for the last 50 years.
Blob squash.
The same arguments, the same low-grade evidence. It's just recycled all of the crappy arguments that we've been debunking for decades.
So are people using an app to like pixelate and blur their photos? Because, I mean, I would imagine they're so crisp nowadays.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's the Navy. I think the Navy footage that came out. Is what everybody sort of pointed to say, hey, look, this is official. Now you were seeing the truth, finally. They finally released this classified footage, and they can't even explain what's going on. Which
and
is
it's still fuzzy blobs of light.
That's right. You know? And that's why I think our best interviews of the year was when we had Mick West on, who did a nice in-depth analysis of those videos and was able to give some explanations about what exactly we were seeing.
We're just about to shift to SGU in 2021. We'll talk about some more of the interviews. The other one was a more recent thing that we haven't talked about on the show, but just it needs to get mentioned. Oliver Stone is back with more JFK conspiracy nonsense.
Oh,
he's just
sort of
doubling down on the JFK conspiracy crapola, making a string of claims that have already been completely debunked. And you know, you wonder if it's going to start the conversation all over again. But, you know, it's bad. And I was reading a good article by Max Boot, who's making the point that, you know, the JFK conspiracy theories, that paved the road for all the QAnon modern crap that we're thinking. You convince a generation of people that the government can pull off and lie about something like murdering a president, and then they could believe anything about the government.
9/11 truthers, yep.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Well, that just answered my question as to why, you know, I'm always so curious as to why certain pseudoscientific things capture so many people's imagination. Like, why that, you know? But you're right. It sort of is like a deep state. I'm an insider. Yeah. You know, I have that power because I know something other people didn't know. Appeal that conspiracy theories have.
Yeah, yeah. Does anybody have any other pseudosciences that stuck out for them this year?
Well, I mean, we got to say something about anti-vaxxers, right?
Well, we kind of covered that in the COVID segment.
I know, but you're just right. Mention it. To me, that's number one. That's number one for the year.
What about Sri Lanka being the first country in the world to ban organic fertilizers and crop protection products?
Well, but didn't they just like unban them really quickly, right?
Oh, yeah, they did. He did a fast turnaround because that's how catastrophic that decision was.
Yeah. There's always complicated politics behind it, but they're irrelevant to the main point of you can't just suddenly ban fertilizer, you know, and think that you're going to still produce all the food that you need to produce. But it was a good microcosm of the world can't do that either. Like half of our food comes from artificial fertilizer, and we're already using all of the manure. So how are we going to suddenly, you know, fertilize the other half of our food production if we ban artificial fertilizer? It's nonsense. You can't do it.
There's kind of a win against pseudoscience that I think we shouldn't fail to mention, which is, you remember those miracle mineral solution idiots?
Ooh, bleach.
Right? They were prosecuted this year, so that's good.
Yes.
So that's like an ongoing kind of fight, but it's always good when we're able to step up against this toxic, these unproven. Because it's one thing to be anti-vax. It's another thing to actively promote.
To peddle poison.
Yeah, poison. Mm-hmm. And of course, we thought 2020 was the year of that with the, you know, what if I shine a light inside of your body and hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and all of this. But, you know, it just spilled right over into 2021.
Yeah, yeah. Ivermectin was the snake oil of 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Alex Jones took a hit this year, so that was good.
Yep. Yes. Oh, yes.
Very good.
Hell yeah.
Go down.
I found an interesting one on TikTok, no less, which is an individual and perhaps a community that believe the Roman Empire never existed. That's
that was a Saturday Night Live skit with Mike Myers way back when, actually.
Yeah.
The Holy Roman Empire was neither holy, nor Roman, nor an empire. Disgust. And that's where it was born.
The Roman Empire never existed.
Have you seen, Ian, all over TikTok? Because I've seen this, like, I've seen screen shares from Facebook. I think it might be a slightly different demographic, but shared all over Reddit of, like, these weird people who are all about pee. And they drink
boil
pee
it, and they drink
and
it,
they put it in their hair.
They put it in their eyes for like
They do pee eye drops. They call themselves like urine.
Peons.
The stream team.
Stream team.
the stream team.
nice.
It's bananas. And the crazy thing is
They don't pee on bananas, do they?
No, it's not banana.
How often, I remember seeing a meme of this person who was like, oh my gosh, the reason with him was so strong. I loved it. It was a screen grab of somebody talking about using, like, they have aged urine.
Yes.
And unfiltered urine. They have all these weird things that they use. So using aged urine for their hair as a natural detoxifier. And he was like, the irony of people who fight against your kidneys being like, that's the stuff your body was like, we have no use for this anymore. Like, this is something we don't want in our body. And they're saying, let's capture this and use it to actually detox.
What? Doesn't have
it
to make
already
sense.
Detoxed.
Yeah, the internet was a mistake.
Doesn't have to make sense.
I feel
sense.
Like it was made up on Reddit and then people actually believed it and started doing it.
Right.
Like, it's just like one of those things where,
well, you know, that it's part of Ayurvedic medicine, drinking tea. So it didn't come out of nowhere.
Oh, it's a whole thing.
It came out of something.
It's called urine culture.
Is it urine culture? I see urine therapy or
urine
something.
Urine therapy.
Yeah, I mean, it's all that kind of stuff.
I call it urine the spotlight.
Oh, boy.
Urine culture is what we do in the hospital to see if you have a UTI.
Yeah, exactly.
And if your urine is red, Did you eat beets recently?
Oh, yes. Very important.
It's more question. Of a mauve, but yeah. Let's talk about some of your favorite segments from the year. We got a few votes from listener. Episode 810, Kara said, don't give the AI lasers. In that same episode, Bob said, fear minus death equals fun.
I didn't coin that, you're but right. I'll take the
partial.
Bob, you could do an entire psychological study on that. That's so true. Evan, that's what a roller coaster is.
Oh, I said 808.
Something. Evan said title breaking is a drag. That's an Evanism, absolutely.
Totally.
Such an Evanism.
Really? Title breaking is a drag. I love it.
Thank you.
And I love title breaking.
Bob said, 828, Bob said, organisms that breathe through their rectum are aspirators.
That's awesome. I forgot about that.
Bob, that's awesome.
That was good for you.
Dynamite.
Very good.
Crap.
And 813, I said, the Jazz Drive was the 8-track of data storage.
Sure as heck was.
True.
That's a pretty nerdy joke, but yeah. You guys have any votes?
Oh, gosh. We got so many emails for people voting for Jay's meltdown about how there's no time zone North Pole.
Yeah. It was a bit of a recent bias in terms of the feedback. Yeah.
But it was really funny, the attempts to argue that nothing could actually happen. Was that actual argument? We couldn't say that something happened.
Steve couldn't. If somebody said, "Hey, what's the temperature out?"
Oh no, temperature.
It's tied
and
to time.
If you can't say what time it is, then you can't actually like do that.
there's still a now, but here's the thing. I left it all in. I didn't edit any of it out because
I heard it. It was fun.
Yeah. Do you guys have a favorite interview from the year? There
yes.
were some good ones this year.
Very
my
good
favorite,
ones.
David Copperfield and Richard Wiseman.
Yeah, that was special.
Awesome. Come
that
on.
Was
yeah,
special.
That was by far my favorite. Mm-hmm. That was my favorite. And I love the Julia Galef one was a fun interview, interesting interview.
Very good interviews this year.
Yeah.
David Copperfield was so charming.
He was good, man.
You know, the thing is, he's a mega, like, first of all, he's a billionaire, this guy. And he's a mega superstar, you know, magician. And you never know how they're going to be, right? Like, you know.
Right.
They could be. Yeah. And it's not like they necessarily have to be an asshole. Just not everybody
just don't
can
have
be
a lot of time for you.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, whatever. They could be very busy. They may not be comfortable in their celebrity, or they're really
aloof.
Shy, but they come off as aloof. And
lots
whatever.
Of possibilities.
A lot of possibilities. He was so like just nice, down to earth. You know, exactly what you would want a celebrity to be. He was all of it. Just an awesome guy. And you know, Richard Wiseman says that's him. He's not. It's not an act. That's him. He's just a super nice guy.
Yeah.
It's always nice to discover that.
Yeah, the fact, though, that he was with Richard for the interview, and Richard had obviously spent a lot of time with him and did this project with him, that made me very optimistic that he would be a decent guy because, you know, Richard is awesome. So it increased the odds in my estimation.
Yeah, it might have made him feel more comfortable, too, to have a friend on the show with him, you know, which is why it was a good
– Yeah, that's
doing
true.
Doing the double
that's
interviews
true.
Can be is can be really good, can work really well. So, that was definitely, I think, the funnest interview that we did. I just wanted to mention the Philip Goff argument interview we did. He was the philosopher. We were talking about the multiverse, right? So this...
Oh, and panpsychism, right? Isn't
you
that
know, he's into panpsychism. We didn't do that interview with him. We might do
gotcha,
that.
Gotcha,
maybe we'll do it next year. But we talked about the multiverse. The thing that I liked about this, I think we did like three takes on this topic on the show. I wrote about it like two or three times on my blog. This was like the hardest thing for me to wrap my head around this year in terms of the skeptical things that we've talked about. And it was really fun to like just try to work through logically. The question is, can we infer a multiverse from the fact that our universe is very unlikely to exist in a way that can support life? And, you know, so we like incrementally worked through the logic of this argument.
Oh, yeah, those email chains were intense.
It was intense, where he was saying you can't infer a multiverse, and I was saying, yeah, well, you pretty much can. And it came down to the subtlest bit of logic. And it was also just like a great example of if you are not like waging war with somebody, you're actually trying to find common ground, trying to understand the other person's position and work together to move forward. We actually like incrementally was like, yeah, we both agree on this. Let's go step by step and see what we can agree on. And it came down to like this nuance, which we couldn't resolve, which was whether or not the question is, what's the probability of our universe existing and supporting life versus what's the probability of any universe, some universe existing that can support life. And, you know, we were unable to resolve which was the correct question. But I just thought that whole process was awesome. You know,
yeah, that's almost a, that's a rare best case scenario, isn't it, Steve? I mean, that doesn't happen very often.
That's why it was so much fun.
Right? Because often, you know, there's too much emotion and there's too much pride wrapped into a discussion, and it just, and you can't get past a certain level. But here in this example, you went to pretty much the nth degree, and you, you know, and
we took it to the end. We took it to the end.
Took it to the end. You took it to the end, and you found that subtle little nuance that neither of you really knew at the beginning, but you discovered what that was, the point that neither of you would go past.
Yeah, worked on it together.
The conversation is done, and you know exactly what the problem was. That's great, and that's unfortunately
enlightening.
Too rare.
Yeah, it was enlightening.
I don't think it's all that rare in academic circles.
No, it isn't.
Among philosophers.
No, exactly.
And that's really what he is, right? He's a
philosopher.
Academic philosopher.
Right. In my experience.
In the skeptical universe,
normal people,
it's very rare. Because we're dealing with assholes
on Facebook,
all the time.
It's quite rare.
Yeah, right.
No, it was just like, it was pleasant because it was like a break from arguing with people who have no interest in finding common ground, you know?
Right.
Like, I get so tired of just these endless discussions online and then comment section and dealing with all these people who are just insincere and can't logic their way out of a paper bag and don't want to. They are
lawyering
their side and they're not trying to come to a so this was just such a pleasant departure from that. And it was like, yeah, this is what we should be doing. Just remove all the politics and ideology and emotion and just have a discussion where you try to find common ground.
Right.
And that's going to get you to the best place.
Like two Vulcans talking.
Yeah.
Steve, I enjoyed talking to Andy Weir.
Oh, yeah. He's fun.
Oh,
he's great.
Yeah. That was a great interview, too. Damn it.
Yeah. He's one of those people. The second we initiate a conversation with him, it sounds like we're talking to one of our friends.
Yeah.
And you could tell that he's the same like level of geekdom that we're at.
Yeah.
Like he knows all of our references. He gets all of our inside jokes. He knows like the science and fantasy genres very, very well, where we're like, you know, I just feel very comfortable talking to him. He's a really, really nice guy.
Absolutely. Our first interview of the year was Phil McAllister from NASA. Always fun to talk about what NASA's up to.
Oh, yeah.
We had two more NASA people at Nexus this year. So a lot of NASA contact was great.
Those two talks were fantastic. I mean, that was, going over, the Artemis program and, you know, what the moon missions are going to be like. And then finding out a lot of things, like having a NASA scientist reveal to us that we're not going to have one of those space stations where people, you know, the
no artificial gravity. Not
no
happening.
Artificial gravity.
Forget about it. No shielding. Like, yeah, we're going to get there fast. That's our solution.
Get there fast. Oh, my God. I'll never forget that. How are we going to solve this? Got to get there fast.
Not only get there fast, but then be able to deal with the medical problems.
Yeah, right. Mitigate the radiation.
Yeah, have treatments ready.
Jay, I wish I could rewatch those. Where could I find those?
I thought those tapes were destroyed.
Yeah, aren't those in the, aren't they in the ether? Aren't they up there in the ether?
Jay, nexus.org. You can go to nexus.org and sign up. It's still available.
Ian, that's why
you're
here.
You can go to nexus.org, necess.org. It's never too late to buy a ticket for Nexus because the entire conference is recorded. You can go on whenever you like.
There you go. Bob, I'm surprised you didn't mention Izzy Lawrence, who did a whole interview about pirates.
Oh, yeah. That's what happens, you know, when you get in your late 50s. You forget all this great stuff. I remember the interviews we did in the past month, but before that, who knows what we did.
Yeah, what year was that? I don't know. That was this year. And also, like, I have no
reference.
That
was another great one. You're right, Steve. Thanks for reminding us.
Sure.
Like, 2021 is weirdly lasted a month and also infinity.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a frustrating experience. I don't know what happened this year. I really did have to look at every episode just to remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What this year looked like because
it was a blur.
Oh God, it's such a blur.
And we have to mention Craig Good because otherwise he'll be the only interview we didn't mention.
Oh gosh,
Craig is a friend of ours.
Wrote a book.
When we first knew him, he was working at Pixar. But he's obviously had
Oh my God,
no longer
great
there.
Guy.
Yeah, we talked to him about his book. You know, relax and enjoy your food. And he had his science communicator hat on, and it was a really fun discussion. It was great.
Yeah,
did a great job with that. Yep,
learned a lot.
All right. Let's move on to skeptical heroes and jackasses. I'm going to go first.
Okay.
My skeptical jackasses of the year is every anti-vaxxer. Just a whole lot of them. If you're an anti-vaxxer, you are a skeptical jackass of the year for 2021. And the skeptical heroes are everybody who pushed back against them online or in the public arena or, you know, fought against vaccine misinformation. That was essentially the big skeptical fight of the year, and that defined who were the heroes and jackasses, in my opinion.
I totally agree, Steve. You nailed mine as well, my hero and jackasses. Yep. So frustrating. Such a frustrating year. Because, you know, I actually naively think, like, before the pandemic, but I knew it was going to be a pandemic, you know, I thought, you know, at the very least, during a pandemic, a vaccine's efficacy will just be too obvious to ignore.
Yeah.
But no, they can ignore anything and everything. And that's, you know, as I can't believe after all these years I was that naive. But it was like, you know, I would think when it was in your face,
it gets back to the social media discussion. They're living in a different information ecosystem.
Yep,
they're
literally, exactly.
They're living in a different world. It is a different world.
Can I name two people that stood out on my list? Because they
I don't
are,
know. Can you?
I can. I'm going to.
You may.
All right. Yes. Star NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers claimed he was immunized against COVID-19 at the time. Yep. Then when pressed on it, it turns out, well, he actually treated himself with homeopathy. And that's basically, he lied effectively to everyone when he said, oh, yes, I'm immunized. No, you weren't, Aaron Rodgers, and you got caught. So
he was well hydrated, though.
Yeah, right.
Or slightly hydrated.
And we know Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. One of the Dirty Dozen, right? Here's her quote. I'm sure you've seen the pictures all over the internet of people who have had these shots, and now they're magnetized. They can put a key on their forehead. It sticks. They can put spoons and forks all over them, and they can stick. Okay, it's one thing to say that on your blog, but when you go up in front of the Ohio State House of Representatives and are making this claim in defense of a House bill, that takes it to a whole other level. So, Sherry Tenpenny, you are jackass of the year.
I don't understand why that's a bad thing. You'd never lose your keys. Like, that's awesome. I would love to be magnetic.
Yeah, that's like, a feature, not a bug.
Yeah, I think either I channeled Steve or vice versa, but it's very similar in My Hero and Dummies. So I'm going to tack on a little extra. So I'm going to hyper-focus. Like I was saying, I was like on TikTok a lot. So all the science communicators on TikTok are like kind of doing the quote-unquote Lord's work in trying to combat the pseudoscience and like directly going after other people on the platform, which is really cool. I dig that. And the Dummies is, in a roundabout way, it's going to be Joe Rogan, who influenced my handful of high school and college friends who listen to him and say things like, how many boosters for how many variants are you going to take until you say enough is enough? And that's like a direct quote from a friend of mine. And
I'm like, how much food are you going to eat until you're like, enough's enough?
So yeah, let's swing it back. Joe Rogan's a ding dong. So there you go.
Yeah, Joe Rogan absolutely needed a mention. Thanks for bringing him up. Totally. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
let's say it. Let's have the balls to actually say it. Joe Rogan is an asshole. He doesn't care about anybody but himself. His misinformation is profound. It's profound. And it's so profound that you can't look at him like a serious human being at this point. Like, he is actually a parody of himself at this point.
And that's the thing that's so depressing. You know, Rogan was my first interview on Talk Nerdy, and I used to go on his show regularly. I used to be friends with this guy, you may have heard of him, named Dave Rubin. What happened to him?
God.
He completely fell off the deep end. Yeah. And it's so frustrating when you see these people who you have this core question, and I actually confronted Ruben about it once in text, and I did not get a very pleasant response, which was, do you feel like you finally have the space to say what you've always been thinking, or did you kind of become savvy to the fact that going this route is going to be more lucrative as a career move? And he did not take that question very lightly.
It's a loaded question, but fair.
But not really. But I really fair. Wanted to know, have you always been... Have you always had these views, but you weren't really comfortable saying them out loud?
Yeah. Exactly
I really wanted to know
out?
That because I was like, was I missing something? Did I have a massive blind spot? Or are you physically a different person than you were 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And I actually think that's what's happened. I think with Rogan, I don't know, but part of my hypothesis here is that he's one of these people who just believes the last thing he was told.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when somebody goes on the show and makes what sounds to him like a good argument, because the basic skeptical, you know, toolbox isn't there, then he's like, yeah, that sounds like a good argument. You've convinced me. Because he sometimes has very reasonable people on his show, and those interviews sound reasonable. And then he has completely, you know, off the deep end people, and it's the same to him.
Yeah.
That part scares the crap out of me.
That's such a great insult. He believes the last thing that he was told. Like, you know, that is such a, that is a really, that's a razor blade slice. Yeah, they did. All right, guys, let's go on to the next segment, which we do every year in memoriam. We remember the skeptics and scientists and just people we think are cool who we lost in the last year.
Oh, I've good. Made, I'm glad we get to just do people who we think are cool, because I have a few of those to add.
Yeah, yeah. So I have my list, cool. But you guys add anything to it. We generally don't talk about celebrities, but we always throw in a few if they were special to us in some way. I did want to mention Michael Nesmith from The Monkees.
Yeah, that one hurt a little.
Dean Stockwell. Dean Stockwell was awesome.
Yeah.
He was in Dune, one of my favorite movies. And Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer is just awesome.
Yep, I miss
him. He's just one of those actors that had so much gravitas. Like, when he was on camera, he had so much weight. You know what I mean? It was just amazing.
Couldn't take your eyes off of him.
Yeah, absolutely. Just mesmerizing. Loved him.
So I've got one from that category.
Okay, hit it.
Michael K. Williams, who played Omar on The Wire.
Yeah.
That one hit me hard. I love Michael K. Williams. Yeah.
I agree.
He's, you know, a massive advocate of the arts and just like did so much in his community. So that was like a big one for me. We did lose Norm MacDonald. You know, some people loved him. That one was kind of hard. Yeah.
More
for a lot
some.
Of people. Oh, Stephen Sondheim. Like, these are big people who were massively influential, you know, maybe not so much in the skeptic movement, but and then this one happened really recently and we didn't talk about it on the show. You know who died, I think, just a couple of weeks ago? Anne Rice.
Yeah.
What?
Who wrote Interview with the Vampire.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. Are you kidding? Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was 80 years old. She had a decently long life, and I think she died of cancer, but
I know. I was like, I always look through all the names as I'm compiling the list, and you, it's like there's a range of reactions. One reaction is, oh, they were still alive? Good for them. Good for them.
That
they,
good
you know. And then the other one was, oh my God, you know, they were so young. So like the one that like really hit me hard just for the age thing was Marky Post. You guys remember who she was?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The blonde from Night Court.
Wait, she died?
Lawyer.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
How old is she?
Night that's Court. The thing, Bob. Guess
Holy
how old
moly.
She was.
She was 75.
She was 70.
Wow, Bob.
70 years old. Right, but it just seems like yesterday she was, you know, young and extremely attractive.
Wait, she was on Chicago PD. Yeah? What? Oh, boy. She had a, you know, like a, not a regular, but boy.
Well, Michael K. Williams, Omar, he was only 54.
Yeah.
Ouch.
50 really young. Young. Mm.
Yeah. All right, so there was really only one, like, name recognition sign, you know, science related person who died this year that I could find. That was Michael Collins from Apollo 11, right? He was the pilot. He stayed in the capsule when
I remember.
Aldrin and Armstrong went down to the moon. Yeah, remember that?
We talked about that on the show. Yeah.
He was 90, of course he did. Yeah, 90 is good. That's like one of those people like, great, good for him. Love it when people that are cool make it into their 90s. The other one that's sort of a name I recognized before I just read it, although I think some, you know, if you're like in the field, you'll recognize names, but John McAfee, you guys know that name.
Yeah.
The antiviral
software.
Oh but wasn't his story
the fugitive, actually?
He has a wild, crazy story.
He has a crazy story, but the one thing of note is that later in his life, he you know, quit the company, McAfee, and then just trash-talked the antiviral software, saying it doesn't work, it's bloatware, it's horrible. Like, really, you know, didn't like, you know, the McAfee antiviral software, which I appreciated. So then there were a number of other scientists that are, you know, what they did was more famous than they are, you know what I mean? So there was Masayuki Uemura, who was the designer of the first Nintendo console. Got to get proper.
Yeah.
Awesome. Absolutely.
Kara, you have to know who Aaron Beck was.
Oh, of course. That's CBT. He's like the father of cognitive behavioral therapy.
I know. He developed cognitive therapy.
Yeah, like he's the guy.
Yeah.
100. That's cool.
100 years old. 100 years
old. An incredible book called Prisoners of Hate that I highly recommend to anybody to read, which is all about how everything from domestic violence to genocide, like how hateful thought develops and hateful actions follow. And it's a really, really insightful book into kind of the human experience. Yeah.
Anthony Hewish, 97. Good for him. An astronomer honored for the discovery of pulsars. Discovered pulsars. Hmm. Edmund Fisher, 101. Nice. 101. Nobelist who helped discover how cells talk to each other. Say Gert-Jan van Oldenburg, scientist who linked natural disasters to climate change.
Oh, well, that's big.
only 59. Not sure why he died. But here's one that all parents will appreciate. Arthur Stats, 97. Mm. Psychologist who came up with the whole idea of time out. Came up with time out.
Mm-hmm. Wait.
For kids, you know, for kids. You're in a timeout. That was him.
But, huh? You can't... So, that's attributable to a person.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Paul he probably Patterson. Also studied it, Evan. Like, oh, yeah, he was a psychologist. Like, studied its efficacy. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Paul Crutzen, 87, scientist who named our age the Anthropocene.
Ah. Yeah, oh boy, yeah.
That's a big one. I wonder how he pronounced it. Because it's like a GIF thing, like Anthropocene, Anthropocene. There's a big argument there, yeah.
Anthropocene. And then some, there's a couple of people who, like, were not necessarily sad that they died. Like, we're not going to celebrate anybody dying, but these just want to mention people in the skeptical universe on the other side who passed away. One was Rush Limbaugh, not sad to see him go.
Well,
Larry King did a lot in his later years to promote and to disseminate pseudoscience. A lot of, you know, gullible interviews, Larry King. And then we have to mention the father of the biggest Ponzi scheme in history, Bernie Madoff.
Bernie Madoff, yeah, right. Jeez. Yeah, he's like household name because of that.
Oh, yeah. Totally. And you got Madoff. You know,
I came across a few other sort of influential people who maybe aren't necessarily tied to skepticism, but might be meaningful to people. So, you know, Beverly Cleary, the children's book author?
Yeah.
Right. She wrote all the Ramona Quimby books and, oh my gosh, won so many awards. She died at 104.
Wow.
Yeah. She was 104 years old. Awesome. And then, of course, we lost a lot of political, historical greats. Yeah. Donald Rumsfeld.
Colin Powell,
yes.
Bob Dole.
Walter Mondale. Yeah. A lot of big political historical
guys.
Giants, yeah.
I have one just because her face will probably live on the internet forever. Jessica Walter, who was the mother in Arrested Development.
Oh,
my God. Mm. She has like the best meme collection ever, like for expressing emotion.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, let's go on with our last science or fiction of the year.
It's time for science or fiction.
Each week I come up with three science news items or facts, two real and one fake. Then I challenge my panel of expert skeptics to tell me which one they think is the fake. But before we get to the science or fiction itself, it's the end of the year, so we're going to do the end of the year science or fiction stats. We actually had two listeners submit their stats, Wayne Heller and Zeb Rice. They're a slightly different, which is okay. I mean, you have to count 50 whatever, 1-2 episodes. So, you know, I could see one getting lost here or there. Let me give you Zeb's stats just on what the percentages that everybody did. So these are episodes 807 to 858. So it's obviously not including this episode that we're recording right now. Kara had the highest success rate at 32 wins out of 48 rounds played.
Wow.
66.67%.
This blows my mind, by the way.
You had obviously a very good year.
Kara.
But a very good year at science or fiction just means you didn't do as poorly as everybody else.
So
it's, I don't know if I agree with
congratulations. It's still a failing grade.
Congratulations, no. Kara, if that's your name.
If that's Jay was second.
Fiction is so hard.
At 29 out of 47, or 61.7%.
Nice.
Evan was third, 28 out of 49, or 57.14%. And Bob was 27 out of 50, or 54%. So everyone was above 50%.
What freaking universe am I in right now? What's happening?
I don't know. It's topsy turvy. It's the upside down.
Well,
it is. It's got to be.
Ian, you and I were both tied.
Oh, really?
At zero of out of one.
Yeah, of course.
We both failed one.
Not enough George plate appearances.
Sorry, George. George was zero out of three this year. And then that we had the pilot on, Newt Adcock. Remember him? He was one out of one because he got the one time that he played correct. How many times did I sweep you guys?
Five?
Six.
Three times. Six times. How many times did you guys sweep me?
At least eight.
Six?
Ten. I swept you six, you swept me ten. Yep. The rogue with the longest win streak was Evan with eight episodes, followed by Kara with six, Jay with five, Bob with four.
Wait, what? That's not what I read. All right.
Again, there's two different stats. We have two people submitted two different stats. They're slightly off, but yeah, whatever. They're pretty close, though. So also, you know, Zeb wrote that episode 856, Bob, very recently, you missed an episode, and that ended your longest rogue streak of not missing an episode. The last time you missed an episode was 486.
Oh, wow. So really? Yeah.
Holy crow.
369 episode streak.
Is that like 6 years? Oh, that's darn impressive.
Beat that, punks.
Well,
I can't.
I have a 100% episode streak going, but that's like built into the podcast. Yeah, so not counting me, that was the longest streak of not missing an episode.
Stroke.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun to look back. So that's, I think, fairly comparable to recent years in terms of the statistics.
Yeah, recent years. And I remember kind of early on when I think people started tallying these things.
Yeah, yeah.
I recall being in the 39, 42 percentile.
You guys have definitely gotten better. So, yeah, usually. Yeah. You know,
I've gotten worse.
That's true. I used to be in first and second
every year.
Yeah, there was like a couple people below 50%, a couple above, and. Like at the high end, it was like around 60%. So you guys have really crept up in terms of your baseline percentage over the years. I mean, I think you guys are just getting better at it. You know, you sniff them out really, really well, you know.
Yeah, expanding our base of knowledge.
Okay. Are you guys ready to do the last science fiction of the year?
I'm ready.
Red Dad.
We have a theme this week.
Uh-huh.
The theme is 2021. These are items about the year 2021. And that are four items instead of three. There are four.
No.
Nice emphasis there, Steve.
Yes.
Jean-Luc.
Item number one. 2021 is on track to being one of the warmest years on record, making the warmest 7 years since 1850 the last seven. Item number two. The number of recorded earthquakes of magnitude 4.0 and above was up sharply in 2021, with almost double the annual average for the previous decade. Item number three, the best performing stock for 2021 was GameStop, with returns of 815% and creating a meme stock frenzy. And item number four, TikTok beauty trends in 2021 included Rudolph-style nose blush, eye bags, and snail facials. All right, we're going to go in the reverse order of your scores, as I usually do. So that means, Kara, you go first.
One of the warmest years on record, making the warmest 7 years since 1850, the last seven. I buy it, but there's a million ways that could be tweaked to be wrong. But yeah, it's definitely one of the hottest years. And the past decade has been full of many of the hottest years, so I'd buy that. Number of recorded earthquakes, 4.0 and above, was up sharply. It's almost a double in the annual average for the previous decade. You mean across the globe?
So, in the world.
So if you take the
average annual earthquakes over the last decade, 2021 was double that.
That's weird. Unless the only thing I could think would account for that is either better measurement skills or fracking. Like, nothing else like makes there be earthquakes. That's so weird. The best performing stock for 2020 was GameStop. Oh, yeah, I remember the GameStop thing. But I'm wondering if it actually did do that well. So you were saying at its peak it was the best performing stock.
No, that's not.
Oh, you're saying overall?
Year, yeah, if you January 1st to today, you're up 815%.
Still? To the moon. Okay. TikTok beauty trends included Rudolph-style nose blush. Sure. Eye bags. I don't know what that is, but okay. And snail facials.
It's makeup to make it look like you have bags under your eyes.
That's the dumbest thing ever. Why would you do that? Snail facials are a legit thing. These don't feel very 2021. They feel very like 2016. But I don't know. You could have just literally made them up. I'm going to say the GameStop is the fiction, because even though it did peak really high, I think it also crashed. Could be wrong, but that's what I seem to remember.
Okay, Jay.
I disagree with Kara. I think GameStop very likely was up there. I mean, with all the craziness that happened with it this year. The TikTok beauty trends, I mean, how could I possibly doubt any of those things? Rudolph style, nose blush, eye bags, and snail facials. I mean, that's not even weird enough to make me question it. So it's between 1 and 2 for me, 2021 on track, being one of the warmest years on record, making the warmest 7 years since 1850. I mean, if there's anything wrong with that, I would think that reference to 1850, I bet you that it was probably much longer ago. I would say that one is the fiction.
Okay, Evan.
Boy, these warmest years on record. It's just so easy to say that these years are the warmest on record, and chances are you're not wrong. But is it the warmest 7 years since the 1850? I mean, that's, yeah. Unless you recently looked that up, you're not going to know that. The earthquakes one. So this is interesting, because did we somehow, I'm trying to think about how exactly did this happen? Could it have happened? Our detection methods became more sensitive, and we were able to detect earthquakes that were happening this year than were actually happening in prior years, just not detected. For some reason, I'm not quite sure. The GameStop one, it went gangbusters, but did it come back down? Can't remember that exactly. And TikTok beauty trends, snail facials definitely is a thing. We've been reading about that for 20 years practically. These other things. So I think I'm gonna agree with Jay and say the one about the warmest years on record. I have a feeling that's going to turn out to be not exactly correct.
Okay, Bob.
It's the beauty trends. That's easy. I mean, I've tried all those beauty trends, so I know that's definitely
they've thing. All worked, Bob, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Just
yeah,
saying.
Great. Let's see. The stock, you know, I remember when it spiked. I thought it crashed. Did it go back up? I don't know. I don't follow that. And the earthquakes, that doesn't sound right. I mean, why, you know, over a decade, you know, is it just natural variation? Double the annual average? That sounds pretty dramatic. I think I'm going to go with the guys, though, and say I think there was 1 year that was kind of like in the outskirts beyond, you know, more than 10 years ago. That was a little bit extra warm. That's in that top seven. I could be wrong, but I'll go with the guys and say that's fiction, too.
And Ian, as the person with 0% record, seriously, you get to go last.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, the warmest thing, I think, just smells right or feels right, maybe, because it's warmth. The number of earthquakes, it does seem like a measurement thing in my head too. I'm kind of siding with Kara in this thing. Best performing stock with returns of 815%. That one, I don't know. I think it is actually true, even though I feel like it might have peaked higher. Would that be possible to peak higher and then still the returns are 815, I think, and still be the best performing of 2020. I mean, 2021. I think that's probably what it is. I mean, Elon tweeted about it, so it must have skyrocketed at one point.
If he tweets about something, that's solid.
That's a solid business. Yep, yep, yeah. Definitely invest. TikTok beauty trends in 2021. Blush, eye bags, and snail facials. I mean, that one feels like so accurate just for the goofiness of it, like the meme of it. So I'm gonna be weird and say the earthquakes is the fiction.
Okay, so we are all over the place except for number four. So we'll start there. You all agree that TikTok beauty trends in 2021 included Rudolph style nose blush, eye bags, and snail facials. Do you all think this one is
Steven sounds slimily happy,
and it's just funny so either thrilled. Way. And this one is science. This is science.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's a little bit of a story pauses. Behind each of these. I mean, the snail facials is old, right? That's not anything new. But that did have a peak this year on TikTok.
Yeah.
Why the Rudolph style nose blush? Why do you think that was a thing?
Because of masks.
Because of masks. Because the nose is under the mask anyway, and so you can do it. And you're still look fine, but boom, you got the Rudolph nose under your mask. Whatever.
So when there's a reveal, it's like, what? Shocking. TikTok worthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then what about the blush all over the inside of your mask? Anyway.
And what do you think about the eye bags?
I don't get that. I don't know. But TikTok is weird. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be something people go out in public with.
But that's kind of like the Visco Girl style with like the messy bun kind of thing. But it's like so put together messy. You know, it's like.
Oh, see, I thought maybe it was one of those things where they peel the crap off their face.
Oh,
have you
interesting.
Seen that?
Oh, the black.
You know, where they
mask?
Do almost the like prosthetic-y stuff and yeah. then they peel yeah. it off.
Oh, that. Oh.
Yeah. I don't know.
So this, it's possible that this came out of another trend this year. And that was the Squid Game makeup.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
Making right. yourself look haggard and broken down, even injured, you know, and et cetera.
so
but, all, but there was so something, the eye bags thing was like to make your eyes smiley or something. It was.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Sure. Whatever.
All right. I guess we'll keep going backwards. The best performing stock of 2021 was GameStop with returns of 815.
Wait, you didn't explain the snail facials.
I said,
yeah,
that's,
but everybody
that's,
just knows that.
That's an old thing that just came back this year.
Okay, apparently.
Because you have slime on your face, right? It's like, you know, that's your...
It's like, sure. It's like masks. It's like yeah. a mask yeah. source.
Okay.
Snail slime.
Okay.
The best performing stock of 2021 was GameStop with returns of 815% and creating mm-hmm. a meme stock frenzy. So I think only Kara thinks that one is a fiction, correct?
Damn it.
And mm-hmm. this one is... Science. Sorry, Kara.
Yeah.
Brings you down to 65.
It must have been so low to begin with at 850.
It was. It was crashing, I think, right?
Or not crashing. It must have gone way higher than that, too.
It did. It did. But, right. but if it, at the end of the year, if you held GameStop for the whole year, you were up 850.
Yeah.
Damn.
Holy
I wish I could
yeah.
send myself an email to a year
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, right.
Because yeah. yeah.
the meme is like it's a dying company. Like nobody who right, goes to buy yeah. games at a store. Stupid.
Yeah,
that was the whole thing. Yeah,
so it
yeah.
becomes like a penny stock, which is kind of the whole
exactly.
thing. Exactly. Mm-hmm. If it's super cheap, then it has the potential to multiply. You know, not just
and
oh,
a lot of
5%.
People held.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, it was the meme stock frenzy was you know, using social media. Saying, hey, everybody buy GameStop and we'll pump it up. You know?
But then they were like, hold, because so many people were like, oh, I'm going to sell now. It's like, no.
I believe you mean HODL. HODL is the term yeah. that they use.
HODL. I think HODL. It was Hodor. Hello.
Oh, sorry.
Now, the stock that peaked and really crashed and made it end the year as one of the worst performing stocks was Peloton.
Peloton the bicycle thing, huh?
Peaked and crashed in 2021.
Wow.
All right, let's go back to number two. The number of recorded earthquakes of magnitude 4.0 and above was up sharply in 2021 with almost double the annual average for the previous decade. Ian, you are all by your lonesome in thinking that this one – I mean, in thinking that this one's a fixed one. Everyone else thinks this one is
a science.
I hope
Ian wins this
one. I'm kind of with you, Ian.
Yeah.
This
and
second
this
choice.
One is
– Come on, Ian.
A fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, why would that happen?
What?
It wouldn't. It was, you know
– It completely
wouldn't.
Made up.
2021 – was about – it was a little bit above average for the last 10 years. Wasn't even more than other years. And like there were two other years in the last 10 years that were higher. It's up a little bit from 2020. In 2021, so far, 16,436 total earthquakes of 4.0 and above. And then between 2011 and 2020, it's like 15, 12, 13, 17, 15, 15. You know, so it's right in the mix there. Okay, maybe a little bit above average, but not double. Yeah, there would be
Man,
no real reason for that.
I hate these ones, Steve. When you like, all of us are like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. And then we
no,
still
I'm
don't
dying.
Pick it.
Well, and I threw in record. I thought people would, so maybe there were more recorded earthquakes. So that I threw that in deliberately. And I thought mm-hmm. you mentioned that. Like 4.0 and higher, so you couldn't think, well, it's all the tiny little ones. But yeah, no, that was I just made that up. Okay, and then item number one, 2021 is on track to being one of the warmest years on record, making the warmest 7 years since 1850, the last seven. That's science. Why 1850? Because that's when they started the records, right? So it's basically yeah. since we've been recording the annual temperature. Yep, so.
Either know it or you don't.
But it'll probably be about seven, like the seventh warmest year. So there is a peak in there, but that's... It did not enough to knock it out of the top seven. The last decade's the warmest decade, you know, in on record. And yeah, like, you know, it's not a coincidence. The last 7 years are the warmest on record. And we're on track again to keep that trend going.
Good job,
right,
Ian.
So Ian, good
Thank
solo
you.
Win. So now
wow.
you're up to 50%.
Well,
there
done,
you go.
One.
And I didn't even cheat this year. That's good. Well, I got it wrong last year, so
yeah.
either way,
yeah.
cheaters don't win.
I thought you'd be all over the TikTok thing, though, because you're, you know.
Yeah, weird. yeah, it seemed too close to stuff I'd seen. It's like, that's definitely happened. Like, it'll get the views. Yeah. Like, it's just, yeah. Yeah.
Because you're the only one of the six of us who kind of knows how TikTok works.
Kind of. Yeah, just barely.
All right. Evan, give us the – you're going to give us two quotes, a quote of the week and a quote of the year.
Yep. Quote of the week, quote of the year. Quote of the week is as follows. Once again, science saves the day. The end. Professor Hubert Farnsworth.
Good news, everyone.
Very good.
Oh, gosh. Love him. One of my all-time favorite characters in all mediums. Hilarious stuff. Now,
and,
for the year.
And we interviewed him for the show.
Yes, we did. Billy West.
Yeah.
Who I also actually ran into again earlier this year, you guys.
Oh, yeah?
Hey, I reminded him of our interview. He said claims to have remembered it.
Yeah, you never know.
No way, really?
But, yeah, but he was, yep, yeah.
We definitely stood out that day, I think, to him.
That day.
But I think he forgot 10 years about later, hard to
I reminded him. I said we had the big setup with the headphones. We brought the table out and everything. He says, oh, absolutely. You know, but again, who knows for sure. He impressed me. He took a picture with me again. So
very nice.
Now for the year. Write it on your heart that every day is the best day in the year. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
I like that.
Yeah. Very optimistic.
Right.
Very, very uplifting.
Today's the best day because it's today, because it's the day that you're living right now.
That's right.
Right.
That's
that
right.
Reminds me of, like, I remember, you know, someone said, the best camera in the world is the one you're holding, because that's the only one you could take a picture with.
Yeah.
You can't take a picture with any other camera because you don't have it on you right now.
A nice sentiment. Yes.
Yeah.
This is a happy way to end after all the depressing stuff at the top.
That's true.
Yes, absolutely.
Hopefully people make it to this point.
Well, thank you guys for another great year. It was great working with all of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was 2021, in all honesty, it was a rough year. It was, you know, second year of the pandemic, definitely fatigue is beyond, you know, setting in. There's a lot of challenging stuff going on in the world. You know, the skeptical fights are just multiplying. It seems like we're being overwhelmed. But this is my beacon in the darkness. And it's just being with other skeptics, being with you guys, doing this with all of you guys, absolutely, you know, is, you know, psychologically, as Kara says, people are, you know, it could be psychologically harmful. This is psychologically re-energizing. Mm-hmm. Just hanging out with people talking about how much the world sucks and what we're going to do about it, like trying to turn it into something positive. Is, you know, to me, it's awesome.
Yeah, agree.
Mm.
Like.
That's it.
like, subscribe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We got to go back out on the road together. And for me, that was a really, really special moment because we hadn't been able to do that for practically 2 years.
Yeah.
Whereas,
Kara, we hadn't seen you in person in almost 2 years.
That, I know. Like, Jay's children are like little people now.
Yeah, right.
That was really
young adults.
Weird for me.
Mm-hmm. You always want
not
time by
anymore.
Kids.
I'm working on rolling that back. We'll see if that works.
You'll need some AI, Bob.
I remember when we were kids and we would see, like, my parents' friends, we hadn't seen them in a year or two. They would go like, oh my God, they're growing like weeds. And I would hate it. I would hate it. I don't know why it bothered me so much. But now I totally get it. It's like, because that's how you mark time, is like how much someone else's kids have grown or your
that's
own
right.
kids when you have them.
Yeah. That is funny. I wonder what Olivia thought when because I didn't say you're growing like a weed, but I was like, the last time I saw you, you were like a little kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now you're like a little, like you're like a girl. You're not like a baby girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like a real girl.
Yeah, I know. She definitely made a leap to the next phase of her existence.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I agree. I agree with Evan. The private shows were really fun to do.
Yeah.
So if a private show comes near you, make sure to get tickets, everyone. Jay, where can they get tickets?
If you want one to come near you, then just send us a request.
To the extravaganza, you're saying?
No, the private show, Jay. The private shows.
Jay's done with the show. He's like, you read the quote. Why
yeah, like, he's already.
Jay's already mentally checked out. He's in 2022 already.
Go to theskepticsguide.org for private show information and extravaganza.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, guys. This is mainly to Steve and Jay. Working on this book about the future with you guys has been one of the best projects I worked on this year. The best project.
Without a doubt.
And I can't wait to see. You know, what comes of it next year and the year after. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. So so we just had a meeting with our editor today. So we got basically a month to do another round of edits. And it's going to be published next fall, coming out next fall, The Skeptic's Guide to
the Future. This fall or next fall?
Fall 2022.
Right.
Oh, this fall then. Okay, gotcha.
Yep.
This coming fall.
This coming fall. The next one that we are going to encounter.
Coming to a fall near you.
It was a fun book to write and research. Yes. Yeah, and it's the edits were really, really spot on. So we're looking forward to, like, you know, taking it up to that next level. And then we're going to start on whatever the next book project is. We have to talk about what that's going to be. All right. Thank you guys for an awesome year. Thanks everyone out there for listening to the show and for your continued support and feedback and emails. We love it. It really, again, it's the community and the interaction which makes this all interesting. So we don't feel like we're all just, you know, talking into the ether. So thanks for another great year of the SGU. We look forward to seeing you all in 2022. And as I say at the end of every year, until next week and next year. Mm-hmm. This is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information, visit us at theskepticsguide.org. Send your questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. And if you would like to support the show and all the work that we do, go to patreon.com/skepticsguide and consider becoming a patron and becoming part of the SGU community. Our listeners and supporters are what make SGU possible.